You're tuned to 88.1 FM KPPP LP Fargo Moorhead. From the People's Press Project, this is Technical Difficulties, the Cryptcast. I'm your host, Tim Abbott. What's going on? Well, that is a very good question. Obviously, we've been off air for a while. I had brain surgery, which is one of those sentences you never think you're actually going to say to someone. And when I spoke to my boss, that was pretty much the reaction, was one of astonishment. Those of you who follow this show will know that I have hydrocephalus, that it's been discussed on previous episodes and repeated on the KPPP iteration of this show. Hydrocephalus is a brain condition wherein the fluid that usually surrounds the brain and is usually drained from the skull sort of regularly, that drainage system doesn't work if you have hydrocephalus. They go in and install an artificial drainage system, which is made out of plastic. And if it fails, there's this thing called a revision occurs. Most people I know with hydrocephalus have had revisions multiple times in their lives. I'm in my mid-30s, and this was the first time I'd needed a revision. Unfortunately, I kind of blasé'd my way into needing major surgery without giving myself a heads up, because I'm another thing that hydro produces quite frequently, even when it's being treated efficiently by this artificial drainage system called a shunt, is headaches. So I had a headache that didn't go away for 5 days. Actually, the first sign was that whilst I was at work, I had a moment where my eyesight went out of focus, like a really bad Instagram filter. But when I stood up, it corrected. So I walked over to my supervisor and was like, okay, this just happened, but I appear to be okay now. Wasn't happy with it, so I got hold of my specialist, the retinal specialist that I have, because I have vivid and multiple instances of what's called lattice degeneration of my retinas, which essentially means that the fringes of the retina are frayed, and that at some point it might just go pop and I might lose my eyesight completely in one eye, or possibly even both. So, went to the retinal specialist, he checked my intracranial pressure and it was fine, and they couldn't find a reason why the optical issue that I'd had occurred. So, went home. Still had a headache. Was talking to Sonia about it on our sofa at home, and we were like, this isn't right. It's like, it might be okay, but it's not right. So contacted my main neurologist, who is a movement disorder specialist. In other words, she deals with cerebral palsy, mostly. And she said, that doesn't sound right, you need a scan. So had a CT. CT raised some red flags. She referred it to my neurosurgeon, who manages my hydrocephalus, who then scheduled me for an MRI. The MRI basically looked like I had a lobster on my brain. There was so much cerebrospinal fluid visible that, whereas on a normal brain scan you can't see the cerebral spinal fluid, on this MRI, it was, as I said, it looked like someone had superimposed a lobster on top of my brain, and we kind of joked about it looking lobstery. I will probably post the image from that scan on the Technical Difficulties Facebook page if you want to have a look, and probably the Twitter as well, which is, they're both at Light Chronic. So that happened, and I was in surgery. Like I said, they call it a shunt revision, but actually, the distal catheter, which is the top end of the shunt, was so, it had been installed in when I was two, and it was so far into the ventricles of my brain that they couldn't actually take the catheter out. So they just built a new one, installed a new one, as it were, around the existing one. So I now have a defunct system. Well, two defunct systems. I have my natural system, didn't work. The installation in the 80s worked until about a month ago, and it's still there. And this new one that was installed in 2017, which, to be honest, is a heck of a lot bigger than the one that was installed in the 80s. So I have a big lump on the side of my head, whereas previously I had what looked like a, well, it probably wasn't even visible, it was a tiny little, almost like a gnat bite size. I currently have something that looked like somebody hit me with a brick on the side of my head. The incision where they cut my scalp open to install the thing looks like someone branded me with a Bluetooth headset, like all the way round the back of my ear and all the way up to the top of my scalp. So it's a big scar, whereas the previous one was like a little crescent. So that's why I've been off air. That and the fact that I was working full time prior to the brain surgery and didn't really have the time to do the show. I'm happy to say that the disabled blogosphere has spawned a healthy subsection of podcasts which weren't necessarily around back when I created Technical Difficulties to amplify people's voices. People have found other venues, and that's kind of useful. I think that this show still has a place. And I intend on being back on air regularly with updates on things. In case you were living in a cave in the last month, the Republican Party almost in back-to-back actions, and that includes the not-so-esteemed Mr. Donald Trump, who is currently president of the country, to attempts to repeal the Affordable Care and Patient Protection Act, otherwise known as Obamacare, without any kind of actionable plan to actually replace the insurance coverage that people would lose when Obamacare was taken off the statute book. And well, that failed. There were enough people with differences of opinion in the Republican Party, even, who currently have a supermajority, which means they can ignore the Democrats and vote things through on a partisan level, because they have the tie-breaking vote as well in Congress is the vice president, who also obviously is a Republican, Mike Pence. And he did that very thing with something else. He cast his deciding vote. Personally, I think that's a little bit of a flaw in the supposed checks and balances in this country, that the tie-breaking vote in Parliament belongs to a guy who isn't a parliamentarian. He's the vice president of the executive branch. But there we are. That is what it is.
I also have to say, as a British person, I can't imagine a scenario where the Speaker of the House, which is what the Vice President does in terms of his tie-breaking vote, would have that tie-breaking power. I find that utterly bizarre, but there we are. Didn't save attempts to repeal Obamacare. As I said, from my observation at least, the Republican Party appears to have split into three branches, with the, and I use this word advisedly, the libertarian right-wing branch who don't like government, were opposed to the idea of repealing, of the repeal process that was attempted, because that particular repeal process, in their estimation, and we're talking about people like Rand Paul of Texas, that the repeal process that was suggested left too many government levers in place. On the other hand, there were people such as John McCain, at least by my observation, who were being told by their constituents that the removal of government safeguards went too far and there weren't enough government levers remained in place. And so they didn't vote for it either. And if my brain was functioning a little bit smoother, I would be able to tell you the names of the people who objected to it, but I can't right now. And then there was the middle group of, I hesitate to use this word, but moderate Republicans who wanted to repeal and ideally replace Obamacare, and there wasn't enough of them. They got outvoted by the two extremes on either side. The people who thought it didn't go far enough and the people who thought it went too far. And that obviously includes the Democrats, who pretty much universally as a party want the Affordable Care Act to remain intact. And if they're anything, then in terms of reform, they actually want reform in its legitimate sense of revising a law which still isn't perfect. So where we currently are is the Trump administration in the White House have withdrawn funding for birth control. They've withdrawn and they've started to threaten to punish insurance plans that provide for it. They have withdrawn subsidy payments from the federal government level for state-provided Medicare. And then there was a scramble, and I believe there is a current attempt to get those subsidies approved. The phrasing is weird, but essentially it boils down to the Trump administration, when he was running for president, suggested they were going to do this, and the idea was to withdraw support from subsidies at the federal level, which they believe were not authorized by Congress, and according to their reading of the law, such appropriation of funds, I believe is the phrase, has to be approved specifically out of the federal government budget by the passing of a law. Said law did not occur, and there was a scramble to try and get one in place when the federal government, currently led by the Trump administration, pulled the plug on said payments. I'm not entirely sure right now the status of that appeal, attempt to reinstate the subsidies by passing a law that requires the subsidies to be paid. The bottom line is, to use a nautical phrase, that they're trying to scuttle Obamacare. So having failed to sink it and float a new boat in its place, they're trying to scuttle it by obstructing its functioning. And the most recent process through which they've done that is the complete failure at the federal government level to actually promote the fact that we are entering the open enrollment window wherein everyone can apply for state and federal Medicare, Medicaid benefits. So, with no action from the Trump administration, former healthcare officials from the Obama administration have taken it upon themselves as private citizens to advertise the opening of the open enrollment window. Having failed to coalesce a coalition of opponents for Obamacare, the Republican Party decided to, well, violently and publicly arrest protesters from ADAPT who were sitting in offices protesting the proposed removal of Obamacare's protections. And then, having committed that act of political violence, they then moved on to the parliamentary process of attempting to change, alter, debase the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm beyond words when it comes to why it is that this particular group of people want to attack disabled people in particular. But maybe it isn't that they are attacking disabled people in particular. Maybe it's just that they're attacking everyone. And from our perspective, we are disabled people, and so we see these things. I have absolutely no doubt that there is a racial component to this as well, and that the high prevalence of disabilities amongst people of colour because of reduced access to services, mostly in early and ongoing life, is a contributing element when the government is currently quite vibrantly and obviously a white supremacist government. As the t-shirt that I have says, our existence is resistance. I've said this before, I'll probably say it again a few times in my life. I am an immigrant and will remain so even beyond the point where I naturalize as an American citizen. I will always have been an immigrant who moved to this country. I'm a white man from England with all its imperialist baggage, but I'm also an immigrant and a disabled person. And so I see what's going on, and I have a voice and a platform to speak about these things, but other people have more knowledge and more detail, and as I said at the top of the show, have their own platforms which are
very clearly worth some of your time. Collaboration would be a nice thing, but the disabled rights community, in my experience of these things, does not collaborate very easily. So instead, maybe you all listening can create your own collaborations and find, and the journalist in me says, find your multiplicity of sources, find as many podcasts as you can, and mainstream and not mainstream media, because I believe there are good journalistic actors within most branches of the media, if not all. So find the sources that you... find sources with information that you don't already know, not just the sources whose information you're comfortable with. Challenge yourself. Find these interesting things. There's lots of it around, and within the disability rights movement, there are lots of perspectives which vary. And it's interesting and useful, I think, for people to just challenge themselves and find out what's going on. Especially if you, like me, are a white man, and therefore the perspectives of people of colour and women are not naturally present in your life, and the necessity, therefore, I think, to find out these things and find out how the lived experience is different for these other people and what their perspectives are on the various threats and acts within life as a disabled person right now. So, yeah, I'm going to dig around and see if I can find some of the links to these things and share them with you. And again, I'm happy if people want to come on the show. They don't even have to be filtered by me. If you have audio that you want broadcasting on KPPP with a disability rights angle, then just let me know and I will broadcast the audio, FCC rules permitting. As in, I will broadcast it, but may have to filter it for swearing. It's the most obvious thing, for curse words, as you would say, in this part of the world. Other than that, it should be pretty easy to rebroadcast most of the content that I've heard, which is solid and intellectually rigorous, but not necessarily inaccessible as a consequence. On the subjects of which, I will give a brief shout out to David Perry, who was a guest on our show and continues to be a beacon of rigorous, well thought out, but emotionally engaged content on the subject of disability rights. He's also moved up here, so maybe at some point I can come interview him in person down in the Twin Cities, since he's moved to the University of Minnesota since our show together. Keep your ears peeled, keep your eyes open on our social media, and listen to as much as you can. And we will attempt to bring you perspectives that you may not have heard before. Because that's pretty much the point, especially in 2017. Not necessarily to repeat things that people can access easily anyway, but to bring you people's perspectives you may not have heard before, or angles you may not have thought about, and things that are thought-provoking. if there's anything left in a world where people doubt facts, it is that you may read, hear, or listen to something where you are left with a provoked thought. And if you ever listen to any of our content, and I mean this as the entire radio station, and you have a question about why or wherefore, I'm absolutely sure that myself and my colleagues at KPPP would be willing to answer those questions and to delve into those philosophical spaces. Because at this point, rights, human rights, civil rights, disability rights, they are both a philosophical and a physical, literal issue. Once more, thank you for listening. Personally, the state of Minnesota decided that I was working too many hours, and so pretty much at the time that, or immediately following their paying of the extremely expensive brain surgery that I underwent, they notified me that because my employer actually offers a health plan which they deem to be affordable, the state cannot insure me. The mechanisms for these things are weird, but it essentially boils down to if I work fewer hours, I can provoke the private health insurance through my employer to withdraw its eligibility, and then that would trigger what they call a qualifying life event. That is a qualifying life event wherein I can apply for state insurance through the state of Minnesota because I no longer have that private health insurance. But I have to wait because the measurement window for my hours is still going on, and when that window closes, they will realize that I'm now working part-time because I'm recovering from brain surgery, and therefore I won't work enough hours to qualify for the private health plan, therefore I should be able to apply for state insurance. It is a complete cluster. And if you didn't follow what I just said, I don't blame you. But that is where I personally am right now. And yeah. I don't think I've broken any confidences saying that. That is where I am, and I'm kind of waiting for the state insurance to kick back in because the major thing about the private plan that I'm currently insured under is that it has a high deductible of $4,000. And if you're listening to this in the UK, where we don't deal with deductibles for health insurance, or B, if you've never just dealt with deductibles in insurance, full stop, the basic premise is this. You spend money out of your own pocket. The insurance plan gives a discount that's been negotiated by the insurer, at least according to their paperwork. And some of these things are up to like 50% cheaper than the cash price, which would be if I was completely uninsured. However, the money that I put in would be out of pocket, and it would mean that I would have to spend $4,000 on medications and doctor's visits and all the things that you all will know you pay a co-payment for, at least a co-payment, if not a complete payment. I would have had to spend $4,000 before the health plan starts contributing to the cost of said things, before the health plan provides a co-insurance payment. There is another element to the private health insurance that is provided, which is this weird hybrid mechanism called a health savings account, or HSA, where employers contribute into a pot instead of paying directly for care. Nonetheless, the money gathered in said pot can be redeemed for the costs of healthcare. So that doesn't make any sense, but nonetheless, there is that money as well.
On the other hand, in contrast, both medical assistance, which is the mechanism through which I would be insured if I wasn't a recently arrived immigrant, I'm barred from medical assistance even though I only earn $10.50 an hour because I haven't been in the country for 5 years, and Minnesota Care, which is the next tier up, which usually applies to people with higher incomes than I have, but also kicks in because I'm an immigrant, they all have co-payments that are in the single digits for medications and costs for doctor's appointments which are less than $20, or maybe $20-$30, and this private insurance is $80-$100 for things. So it's not affordable. And therein lies the reason that it's actually cheaper for me to work less. You tell me how that makes sense. Completely farcical. But there we are. That is the nature of the system that we currently live in. And I'm not going to get involved right now on this show discussing the idea of Medicare for All, because that is a show that probably requires an entire hour and some policy wonk that can explain it to me and how it would work and how it would be financed, because honestly, I can't go there. I don't know that information. But having grown up in the NHS and having had my life saved by the NHS and then subsequently my life saved by the state of Minnesota at its expense, I can fundamentally see why Medicare for All is a good strategy, and I believe financially the Medicare system for, which is the elderly people's mechanism if you're not familiar with this system, is very, very financially healthy and is not remotely a drain on public resources. So maybe that's the answer, but I don't know. And there we are. That is where I am. And the weather is closing in. And so it's been kind of interesting adjusting to a recovery from major brain surgery whilst the temperatures dropped from the 30s into the 20s and with wind chills in the teens, and that's Fahrenheit. So basically translate that into centigrade for you guys. If you don't deal with Fahrenheit, we're talking probably about 10 degrees above to about 10 degrees below centigrade. It was like somebody flicked a switch and winter suddenly arrived. I'm glad I have my what's called a winter ferrule, which is a literally a spiky piece of metal that's on the bottom of another cane that I have. So the cane that I currently use has a rubber tip. When the ground is frozen, I switch to my metal tip. And also, now that I finish at 4:30 in the afternoon, finish work at 4:30 in the afternoon, I can get picked up by Sonia and I don't need to walk home. So also the mechanisms of that are safer. Instead of covering myself in fluorescent yellow safety gear and walking along possibly a frozen sidewalk. And you've probably seen pictures if you follow me on social media of the concrete trees between me at between my workplace and home. It's a nice walk, but not particularly when the weather is as cold as it is, and it's only going to get colder over the next few months. So that is where I am. Stuff is beginning to stabilize. I had a really good day at work, and this is why I'm talking to you now. So yeah, I hope you can hear that stuff is improved. My throat is a little bit ropey, due to a medication that I take that I have to smoke. So yeah, that is yeah, I can take throat sweets and deal with it. And medication also switched whilst I was recovering from surgery, and I'm gradually taking some of the things out of my ridiculously long medication list, although it's nowhere near as ridiculously long as Sonia's. Mine, I'm trying to lessen some of the medications which negatively affect my cognitive processing, give me what we all in the spoonie community would probably refer to as brain fog, and possibly even make me so tired that I need to drink coffee to counteract it. So I'm switching away from that and towards gentler, more holistic remedies which actually clear my head rather than making it foggy. Life is good that way. I was certified because the medication in question deals with chronic long-term muscle spasms, and my primary care physician was absolutely convinced that I qualified, and therefore I qualify. And I take my medication, and I'm back at work and functioning like a good capitalist drone. earning tax, which will go towards the benefits that they currently won't give me. Not that I'm bitter or anything. So there we are. We're about halfway through the hour. We're probably going to take a musical break. I've no idea what music. When I get back from the break, I'll tell you what music has gone in, but I'm going to take a break for the halfway point. You're tuned to 88.1 FM KPPP LP in Moorhead, Minnesota. From the People's Press Project, this is Technical Difficulties, the Cryptcast. Follow us on social media, Twitter and Facebook at Light Chronic, LightChronic. You can call us 701-6306-881 and leave a message. And if you have any story ideas or any audio you wish to submit, you can contact us that way. I'm working on an email address. Thank you for listening. This is Technical Difficulties. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Metallicum by Anya Ustashevsky.
You're tuned to 88.1 FM KPPP LP in Moorhead, Minnesota. From the People's Press Project, this is Technical Difficulties, the Cryptcast. Follow us on social media, Twitter and Facebook at LightChronic, LightChronic. You can call us 701-6306-881 and leave a message. And if you have any story ideas or any audio you wish to submit, you can contact us that way. I'm working on an email address. The weird slash funny thing about the shunt revision is that I have had to revise and revisit my symptom map, whereas I kind of know with cerebral palsy what is caused by the CP. Hydro was so static in my life that I kind of figured that it was, you know, either the shunt was working and I was fine, or it wasn't working and it could be fatal. But there is a middle ground, and I'm in a lot of support groups for hydro, and I sort of knew that in stormy weather like we currently have here in the Red River Valley, that my head is like a barometer. I can tell if the weather's stormy. I can tell days ahead if it begins to get stormy, because I'll have a headache, and because of the scar tissue in my head from the two revisions I've now had, scar tissue doesn't stretch, and so during those headaches it manifests in that area. But also, the shunt system is physically built around a pressure differential. So imagine a pressurized plane or a diving bell. The pressure inside that system, inside that plane, is controlled. But if you puncture the fuselage, then the pressure from outside has an effect. Now, my shunt is not sealed in that way. It's inside my body and pretty much exposed. Like, there's a thin layer of skin between the valve and the outside world. So I firmly believe, and I have lots of evidence, medical or anecdotal, of other people who've had this situation, that when the pressure changes, I have a headache. But also, if the flow of the liquid that I was talking about before is dependent on a pressure differential between the scalp and, in my case, the gut lining, the peritoneal cavity, to give it its medical name, wherein the liquid drains. So what actually happened when my shunt failed was that chronic constipation meant that the bowel wasn't emptying properly, and therefore there was fluid buildup on my brain and fecal buildup in my bowel, and therefore no pressure difference. No differential, wherein, just in basic physics, if you have high pressure outside and low, or high pressure up and low pressure down, it affects the flow. If you need an explanation of why, then just look at weather systems and how they function, and, well, hurricanes and stuff, and they shift round. They change direction because of a differential between pressure. And if there is high pressure outside of something, it will push inwards. So, So yeah, so that was going on, and therefore the pressure differential, I was categorically told, is an issue. Now, the original shunt they put in the 80s was, well, old school. It had no... it wasn't adjustable. And that sounds... that might sound weird. If you have no knowledge of hydrocephalus, you might go, well, why would it be adjustable? It's a drainage system. However, there are levels of pressure. And in this day and age, there's actually a mechanism that is magnetic that they can put in the shunt valve that makes it so that with an external big magnet thing that they stick to the side of your head, and I'm not joking, they can, when I say they, I mean the neurosurgeons can adjust the sensitivity, if you will, the pressure level within the scalp to counteract anything going on in the flow of the system down into the peritoneal cavity. So when they put a new shunt in, they put an adjustable valve in, and as I speak to you right now, it's currently at a slightly lower pressure than is usually set for because of my bowel issues. So we're attempting to get that under control. I have a different gastrointestinal specialist, and I will see him when the insurance actually allows me to afford it, as I was discussing earlier on. So So as I was saying, as well as the headaches, as a kid, I was plagued, for want of a better word, with nosebleeds during storms. And the weather is nowhere near as severe in England. We don't really get into the 20s, let alone the minus temperatures, which happen quite regularly during Minnesota winters, and I'm still talking Fahrenheit here. However, thunderstorms used to give me a cracking headache and quite often a nosebleed. I'm going to be charitable and suggest that the science wasn't up to it, but nobody at any point told me that these nosebleeds may have been hydrocephalus related. I think they probably are. But if you're listening to this and you know categorically if the answer to that question is yes, they are, then let me know. I gave the contact details out earlier on. I'm kind of curious. When you just have a headache and then suddenly it becomes brain surgery, you start wondering how long stuff failed for before it was actually spotted on a scan. And I believe my baseline scan was done a year ago, so somewhere in that year my shunt began to fail. But it remains an open question whether or not these nosebleeds that I used to have that I no longer have were a pediatric manifestation of shunt drainage issues. And you can just trust me when I say there are a million grey areas between functioning and not functioning. It's not, as I said, it's not as I originally believed it to be, where I thought the system was either working or not. There's kind of a million middle grounds there. Any information that you guys have, please feel free to let me know. Twitter and Facebook at LightChronic, or you can drop me a voicemail at 701-6306-881. And yeah, that is pretty much the open question right now. My new baseline scan will be taken in the middle of November. And from there, we will have an idea, and if necessary, we will shift the pressure, as I was saying, with that weird external magnet thing. So yeah, right now, the weather's stormy. I have a bit of a headache, but thankfully no nosebleed. And yeah, it's... That's where we are. For the technical difficulties crew, far and wide, I am Tim Abbott. Wear your scars with pride, and remember, we all have technical difficulties. Goodbye.